All right. Welcome everyone to breakout room three. Let's give everyone about a minute or two to come in. I think there's still some people in the main lobby before we get started. Perfect. I have received the green light. So once again, a warm welcome. We have an action-packed 45-minute session ahead, focusing on two distinct challenge statements coming from Rolls-Royce. My name is still Johannes, and I will be moderating the session today and ensure we stay on track as we explore the opportunities in more detail. In this particular room, we will cover two challenge statements. Rolls-Royce is seeking scalable training solutions that sustain high confidence assembly skill across multiple engine variants despite high turnover and equipment constraints. And the second challenge focuses on modular MRO, enabling non-linear engine handling so technicians, can handle specific components as needed rather than follow rigid disassembly lines. Our speaker from Rolls-Royce will give a high-level insight sharing regarding standard engine disassembly today before diving into specifics of both challenge statements they have launched as part of this innovation challenge. To kick things off for Rolls-Royce, it is my pleasure to introduce Raj. He is the technology strategy lead for engine disassembly and reassembly at Rolls-Royce, and leads the regional aftermarket services and repair technology team in Singapore. He has spent over 11 years with Rolls-Royce Singapore, and during this period, he has led multiple technology programs with regional ecosystem of research centers like NTU, ARTC, to deploy in global MRO bases and industrialize new aftermarket capability. Raj holds a bachelor degree in aerospace engineering from Singapore's NTU, and he'll walk us through the operational needs and the vision for Rolls-Royce's two challenge statements. And a gentle reminder, we'll have about 10 to 15 minutes before the sharing, before moving on to the Q&A section. But if you do have any questions throughout the segment, please use the Q&A feature at the bottom. And then at the end of Raj's sharing, I will enable you to unmute yourselves as well to raise your questions. With that, Raj, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Johannes. Morning, afternoon, evening, everyone. So I think Johannes gave a very flattering presentation introduction to me, so thank you for that. Before I dive into, I think Johannes covered quite a bit of this. I look after a team of technology introduction engineers within the MRO world in Rolls-Royce in Singapore. And I also look after the technology strategy for engine disassembly and refurbishment. I have been in Rolls-Royce since October 2013. It's my first job. I'm still here, but it's definitely not my first role. I have spent some time in manufacturing. I have then spent some time looking at bliss repair. And I have also led a joint program with Rolls-Royce, Sazel, and A-Star for advanced MRO development. So it brings me great pleasure to participate in this. And this is the first time Rolls-Royce is participating in it, and we are genuinely very excited. We have done quite a bit of technology development, and this is going to be another challenge that fits into our long-term technology strategy. So the way I will do this presentation is, first, I will just quickly walk you guys through our standard engine disassembly steps. The reason for doing that is because both the problem statements are based on the standard engine disassembly today. So this introduction covers both the problem statements, and then I will spend 5 minutes on each of the problem statements to go into a bit more details. I will have to apologize that there are certain details we can't share at this moment, A, because it's a global audience, so there are some export control ratings, and also there are some IP stuff. However, rest assured that as we go in further into the program, and if there is a proposal that's selected, we will then ensure we have the right agreements and NDAs in place that allows us to have a much more detailed sharing so that whoever of you selected can have a proper in-depth understanding of the processes. Okay, so standard engine disassembly today. I have just put an example of an engine, but effectively it can apply to any other engines as well. For Rolls-Royce, our main business is civil aerospace, but for those of you that aren't familiar, we also have business aviation, so all your private jets. We do marine applications. We also do land-based gas turbines. This specific one is for aerospace. However, that means both business jets as well as the very well-known Trent engines. So the Rolls-Royce has some of the core Trent engines like Trent XWB on the A350s, as well as Trent 1000s, Trent 700s, and the brand new Trent 7000 and Trent 1000XE. Regardless of which Trent engine we are talking about, when the engines come in for disassembly, this is the orientation that is on the picture that the engine is on the aircraft. So this is what we call horizontal orientation. When the engines come in, we have to flip it 90 degree through gantry system and ceiling mounted cranes. And then as the engine is vertically placed, we do a sequential front to back disassembly. So that means in our engine structure, it is structured from module one to module seven. Five is at the bottom. We take out module one from the top first, followed by module two, module three, so on and so forth. One of the core reasons for doing that is because where Rolls-Royce engines differentiate from some of our competitors is what we have a three shaft engine. So we have three systems. The low pressure system, which is at the two furthest ends, the compressor and the turbine, the intermediate pressure system, and then the high pressure system. Each of these systems consists of a shaft and a compressor stage and a turbine stage. So they are all stacked up accordingly. So first we take out the low pressure compressor, then the shaft. So that's why we do the vertical way. Now, obviously, their vertical way provides us with some significant advantages. For one, gravity is working for us because it's easier to stack up, if you can imagine. However, what that also means is because we are doing it sequentially, when we have MRO operations, not all the time we need to take a look at each of the seven modules. Our module 04 and 05 are our hottest modules, number four and number five. A lot of the degradation that happens in those modules. And there are a lot of MRO operations and refurbishments that we need to do that are in module 04 and module 05. However, in order to access 04 and 05, we still have to take out one, two, and three. And then we get to four, and then we get to five. The one big disadvantage for that, the very obvious one, is time. It takes a lot of time to remove that stacking. And as I have put here, it takes 2 to 3 weeks servicing time. And it's just for your info, that 2 to 3 weeks is not a the entire engine is serviced within that time. That 2 to 3 weeks is just on taking the engine modules apart. Then, and obviously with a large number of technicians per engine as well. Now, the problem statements we'll be talking about, one of them is this very fact that we are doing it in this top to bottom stacking fashion. The second bit is a lot of the MRO processes obviously is standardized. It's very SOP, standard operating procedure driven. However, there also is a significant level of tacit knowledge in the system. What that means is, because these engines go through significant amount of wear and tear as in operation, the standard operating processes sometimes have to be added on with tacit knowledge of experienced engineers on certain things. So if there is a specific talk that's given, sometimes that tacit knowledge lies in how exactly do you place the wrench or the torque and untorque it, which might not be there in the SOP. And in Singapore, with a pretty evolving workforce, retention of this tacit knowledge in such a complex task becomes quite challenging. So this, I hope, gives you a very broad introduction to the disassembly process that we have today, right? Now I will jump into the first problem statement, which is augmented training and disassembly. I'm assuming all of you have read these words before because this is on the domain. So the whole point of this problem statement goes back to what I mentioned previously in terms of tacit knowledge retention, but also for expedited training and augmenting. Now, I want you guys to keep in mind that I want to be very emphatic on the word augmenting. What we are looking for is not an alternative method to train, but an augmented method to train, which means we will obviously have all the certification requirements that goes through the training. What we are looking for is augmenting that training and the disassembly process that allows us to A, capture this tacit knowledge so that when we have workforce that's refreshing, we do not start from base ground zero. And the second thing is, how can we augment the task of training and retraining and the actual disassembly task through any form of new technologies, right? So let's get into it a bit more in the next slide. So this is the challenge. For any new technician that joins in Rolls-Royce, it takes between 6 to 9 months of full certification. And when I say full certification, I mean the entire engine front to back, of which 2 to 4 weeks are very, very focused on the external assembly of the training per engine type. So, what do I mean by external assembly? In the picture, you can see that external of the engine is all the things from we have something called line replaceable units. So, units that are mounted on the external of the engine. This includes things like fuel pumps, fuel oil heat exchangers, and the EEC, which is effectively the brain of the engine. But on top of these units, we also have tons of harnesses, pipings, tubings, and wirings. This entire process is extremely time consuming. And more importantly, it is on the critical path because, firstly, you cannot go inside the engine until you take these out. So, you cannot be running this in parallel. So, it's the first out. And also, once the engine has been built back up, these are the last operations to happen. So, they lie on the critical path. For each engine, it requires roughly 10 to 12 technicians per shift. And obviously, it is a skilled task. knowing exactly which pipe in which orientation do we place, what are the P clips and the bolts that go in. And there definitely is a lot of tacit knowledge in it. Today's operations, we have some level of digitization. We do have our instructions on tablets, but at the end of the day, it is still a tablet-driven instruction where the workers are going up and down the PDF sheet looking for part numbers, matching them to the process step, and then matching them to the exact dimensions, and then placing it on, bolting it on, and so on and so forth. There are certain nuances to it where even though the process steps say A, B, C, D, E, so for assembly, so for disassembly, it will be reverse E, D, C, B, A. But in certain cases, we know that doing E, D, C, A, B might be better for certain engines because of the way the pipes are placed. And these kind of things are tacit knowledge. And a lot of these critical knowledge exists in the muscle memory of experienced technicians. Given the variations of not only different engine types, so like Trent 700 versus Trent 1000, but also within an engine type, there are different mods. So you have Trent 1000 A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It is actually quite challenging to codify and standardize. This is where this problem statement comes from, where we are looking to use next generation digital capabilities to first help in the training element of technicians, focusing on the externals, and then using some form of digital capability to augment the actual task of disassembly as well as reassembly. Right? So if I go to the next slide, that kind of talks about some of the key requirements. So in terms of requirements, as I mentioned, we want to focus on the external engine components, harnesses, looms, fuel pipes, hydraulic tubings, brackets, fasteners. We are not looking for internal assembly for this, just the externals. There will be an element of teaching complex routing. So there is harnesses have to be routed in a certain orientation and direction in constrained spaces. The sequencing is critical because there are certain dependencies. In some cases, the tasking is always sequential, but in some tasks, the sequential nature is critical because of the dependencies, whereas in other tasks, it is not critical. It's just we need to have a sequence and we have a sequence, but they can be done in parallel. One of the other key things is, as we are talking about in terms of doing the training, when we want to go into application and assisting actual disassembly, real-time error detection is significantly valuable because we focus on something called right first time, RFT. And if you do something wrongly and you only find it out much later, you have to undo all the tasks, a bit like Control Z function on Excel. So we would want to have real-time error detections when something is done out of order, as well as the element of simulation of common error modes. And this comes from some of the tacit knowledge that, oh, these are some of the common errors that happen, because that will give people learning from experience without actually having to make that mistake first. From a performance metrics, we have put certain performance metrics, but obviously there's a lot of dependency on the final solution. We want to have this not a very, very complicated process, but we want to have trainees complete the onboarding of whatever platform we pick within 2 weeks. And we want to have 70% actively using within 6 months, which means it's scalable and deployable across different sites we have in different parts of the world. For I know we are going to talk about questions later, but I'm very sure it's a very relevant question that just popped up, so I will touch on it. As part of this pilot, we are not expecting a fully deployable solution. As part of this pilot, we are ex and this is applies to both the problem statements. As part of this pilot, we are looking for a prototype to tell us what is the art of possible. What kind of platforms can be used, and a in single demo of how it will work, but not a final scalable solution. And to start off for this, we want to just focus on five distinct engine types and not all the different variants within these engine types. And we also want to make sure that when we add on, as we go into, so our engine can have a modification. We don't have to do a complete system redevelopment, which means we should be able to teach the system any modifications that come in without having to go back to square one. Okay, so that covers the first problem statement. Johannes, do you want to do the questions and then go on to the next one because they are two separate, or should I just?
I think we can continue.
Great. So, given that all of that I said, the second one is a lot more focused on handling the engine. So I again go back to my introduction. I said we flip the engine's 90 degree to make it into a vertical orientation, and then we take it out step by step from 1 to 7. We want to look into a solution that firstly is modular. So I will talk about what modular means, but non-linear. So what I mean by non-linear is if I want to you tackle module number 4, can I keep 1, 2, 3 together, take it out, and then take module 4 out on its own, do everything I need to do in module 4 and put module 4 back and then put it back together. So very specific engine MRO. So let's go to the next slide that has a bit more details on it. So as I mentioned, the engines are rotated from 90 degree, which you see in the picture, to a horizontal vertical orientation, and we have fixed engine stands. There are different kind of stands depending on which part of the MRO the engine is at, and there are some examples in the pictures itself. The right-hand side, the blue one, is a full complete engine transportation stand. On the left-hand side, the yellow one is a full engine static stand, and the leftmost orange one is a module stand. So we do have different stands for different parts of the engine. But when we do MRO, we do front to back or top to bottom. And we always have to take out each module one by one. We definitely need overhead cranes, and it is a very fixed process that everything we want to do has to follow that specific order. So, if there is an issue on one engine, like I said, it takes about a few weeks to take the engine apart. But for some reason, if there is one of the joints that has seized bolts, so the bolts are stuck because of certain distortions or certain heavy landings, then we have to put in extra effort to do that task, but it creates a domino effect and delays the tasks lagging behind it. And that is due to the rigidity in the system. We cannot deviate from this established sequence. And I think the limited flexibility is a key point because when we want to specifically work on one module, we still have to take out rest of the modules. And that means additional time. And that also means additional option of finding things. It's a bit like if you have a problem, I hope none of you do, but if you have a problem in your heart or lungs, you still end up doing an open heart full body scan, and you might find a lot more things that does not need to be fixed at this point in time. So we go through undue, unnecessary burden on the MRO shops. So this is a big problem, and it has an impact on the time the engine takes to come out of our shops, which we call turnaround time. And we have another thing which is called work scope creep. So if the engine came in to only work on module 4, but because we have taken the other modules apart, we end up spending a lot more time inspecting those things. So what are we looking for as in the requirements, which is the next slide, is that we need a solution And I have just given an example, right? This is an actual engine stand, but if I want to visualize this, I have sliced this into four different parts. So if we want a modular base, so the engine is still horizontal, not vertical, but the engine rests on a platform that is modular. So if the engine is made up of 1 to 7, maybe the base platform is also made up of 7 modules, and they can have a quick change cradle interface, which means we can keep module 1, 2, 3 together, 4, 5, 6 together, but then split 1, 2, 3 as one half, 4, 5, 6 as one half. And that means we can switch between a whole engine and a module level configuration with relatively less effort and time. For this, again, we are not expecting a full prototype because the full prototype is going to be a few meters long and very, very complicated. But we are looking at some finite element analysis to understand the loadings that will be taken, a design concept, and overall the conceptual design of how this modular trays dock, how do they interface with each other, and how do they move. We do want to have some ergonomic features so that that allows technicians to access different parts of the module, because if we have to take it out and put it back in a vertical orientation, that's just additional burden. And we want to have non-linear handling, which means, like I said, go to four straight. Some of the safety features have to be very well defined, which is it needs to have positional accuracy because that is critical when we align the engine. So some form of alignment capability, be it optical, be it digital, be it sensors. And obviously, the safety element needs to be baked in because there will be humans operating in collaboration with this solution. So that is all the presentation I have, and I think now would be a good time to go through the questions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So if anyone wants to unmute themselves, do feel free to directly do so. If you're on the move or you prefer to do it in writing instead, you may as well use the chat feature within Zoom. Does anyone have any questions that they want to start with? Because I see there's also some in the channel. Yes, Ryan.
Hi, Raj. This is Ryan. On your second issue. So am I right to say that you are looking at building a stand or making modification where you can rotate the engine 90 degrees?
Yeah, so I do not want to rotate the engine 90 degrees. But if we already are able to rotate the engine 90 degrees, not on a stand, but using a crane. But what we at this for this solution, I do not want to rotate it 90 degrees. I want to keep it in the horizontal orientation, basically the orientation it comes in. And I want to split, basically break up the engine in the horizontal orientation.
Okay, so am I right to say that at a horizontal orientation, you are trying to disassemble and make it extended from the front to the back?
Correct.
Okay, I understand. So in this manner, can we say that if we want to proceed further, we need to go in a bit deep dive and maybe on site and understand your problem statement on site? Rather than just through this because there's a lot of mechanical understanding on how currently the engine is being disassembled. So am I right to say that?
Correct.
So I think
So
so if
this definitely will not be the only information you get. And there will be an element of understanding the current process. But I think the focus would be on not the engine itself, but the stands, which is where the modularity comes in, because today it's a long stand that holds the entire engine at certain fixed locations. It's about having the understanding of how do we design a modular stand that is able to hold different parts of the engine when we take it apart.
Yeah, I understand your point.
Perfect. I do have quite a few questions, Raj, coming at you very hot in the chat. First one, and I will do this in a random order. I think that's a very good question to clarify, maybe from your side. Participant isn't sure if is it possible to get to module 4 without disassembling completely modules 1, 2, and 3?
Yes, exactly. It's a very good question, and that is pretty much the challenge here. However, the challenge I'm not expecting this forum to solve is it's more about how do we keep the more stands. So yes, answer to that is we can keep 1, 2, and 3 together because 3 is connected to 4. So as long as we do the unbolting of 3 to 4, it is separated. But we need to find a way to make sure that the balancing of the engine as we take it apart is maintained, which is why today we do it in the vertical orientation because it is the most sensible way we do it. And that's how we have done since decades. But what we are looking for is can we just keep 1, 2, and 3 together? Unbolt the interface between 3 and 4, and then keep that entire 1, 2, and 3 as one module, move it apart so that 4 is exposed.
Thank you. Next question from Wasun Desmond. The current process is a rigid front to back, top to bottom sequence dictated by the fixed 90 degree engine stand. Can you confirm if this linear disassembly sequence is an absolute engineering requirement for the engine, i.e., to access critical structure bolts? Or is it a procedural rule developed over time to work around the limitations of the existing stands? And sorry, I lost my.
Yeah, it keeps disappearing, isn't it? It's
Yeah,
happening for me
no,
as
because
well.
people when people write something, I think stands an overhead crane setup. In other words, if we gave you a tool that could safely present any module in any orientation, would the engine's design allow you to, for example, remove the immediate compressor before the fan, or is that technically impossible?
Yeah. That's a very good question. And the answer to that is yes, you can't remove. So I'll go ex specifically that example that's given. We can't remove the intermediate compressor before the fan because the fan is the low pressure compressor system. So the low pressure compressor system is connected to the intermediate compressor system. But if I want to remove the high pressure turbine system, which is number 4, I do not need to remove the low pressure and the intermediate pressure compression system. I just need to remove the high pressure turbine system with the combustor unit. But anything up front doesn't need to be except. And that's why I say again, it's possible to remove the shaft, which goes all the way through the engine. But the shaft, again, you can pull it out. But if I'm removing the turbine, any bolting between intermediate compressor and low pressure compressor does not need to be removed.
Sophia has a question regarding scale. If a pilot proves successful at one facility, would Rolls-Royce prioritize fleet-wide standardization across all MRO sites or phased implementation based on engine type and facility constraints?
Very good operational question. The answer is we will do it in a phased approach for a couple of reasons. Obviously, the phased approach allows us to verify the solution, and once we have verified, to pull out any challenges and issues that we might face. So what we don't want to do is implement globally, and then any challenges we face, we know that now that same problem is going to affect all the other MRO shops, because that's going to take a significant hit on the entire operational structure. So we will pilot it in one facility, and we will then run it for through the operations for a few times. And even in that facility, we will still have both the traditional method and the new method. And when we gain some confidence, so we will follow the technology readiness level process. And once we have hit TRL 7, then we start rolling it out in the other factories. There will be an element of rolling out per engine type rather than. So, for example, if the Singapore facility does five engine types, we will roll it out on one engine type. And then we will start rolling it out on the same engine type across before we go move on to the second engine type.
Jonathan has a question regarding the training challenge statement. Given the distributed.
Just give one sec.
Sorry, Ryan, do you mind muting yourself, please? Thank you. Jonathan was asking, given the distributed nature of your MRO sites, how important is global standardization of training versus allowing for local adaptation?
So we do need to have global standardization of training, because that allows us with the agility to move across sites as and when operational needs require. So there needs to be a standard baseline training across all the sites. Regional adaptations generally do not happen because this region something different is happening. There are some level of regional adaptations happen, but that is more to do with supply chain. So for example, if there are certain kind of torque drivers that are found that are cheaper but still the same quality but slightly different design in certain region, those MRO shops might end up using that torque driver as long as it's approved and validated. But the baseline training of how we take an engine apart and how we put it back together is standardized across shops, because there is obviously an engineering reason for it, which is what I explained, that we want to make sure that all the engines have the exact same method. But also we all want, there's a commercial reason, because we want to maintain our turnaround time of the engines for across all the different global sites. So there isn't a lot of regional variation. There is some level of tacit knowledge that you pick up, and we are hoping to embed that in the modern training approach that we are looking for.
And what, that's all in English, or how does that work?
The training instructions, they are all in English, but they could be translated to, and we have started to do that in some of our regional sites where English is not the predominant language.
Okay, but for the purpose of this is more around the English language.
Sorry. Then, yes, we do have different languages.
Perfect. Back to the engine disassembly challenge statement. There's a lot of interest around this. Are there specific mountings that are placed in each module that allows for a firm grip and hold or manipulation of that module?
Sorry,
It's the
I'm
last
just.
one from Ionel.
Are there specific mountings that are basic? Yes. So, not only in the modules, but also across the engine, there are very specific points where clamping points where you can add either a overhanging or a ground-based engine stand, which is standardized to a fixed torque drivers and fixed loading, that allows only those points where you can clamp the module or the engine.
Another one from Ryan. Ooh, it's getting very busy here. If a local vendor manages to customize the stand to suit the needs, will the design and IP be protected for this local vendor, specifically back to other MRO global sites?
Yes, so this is a question which even I had discussed with AgorEyes and ESG. At the end of the day, there will be the way we operate the IP will be whatever is Rolls-Royce IP that's bringing into the program, it's Rolls-Royce, and whatever the local vendor brings into the program is local vendors. For the foreground IP, that will depend on the type of IP. So the two projects, they are slightly different because in one project we are talking more about design, whereas in the other project we are talking more about digital. So we do have a structure, a commercial structure of how we negotiate the IP, which will be discussed upfront. It won't be, you know, after everything is done, then we come up with it. We will be discussed upfront, and based on that model, some of it will be either licensed out or some of it will be you know, with the local vendor, with IP will be protected for this local vendor, and then the local vendor can license this out to the other MRO global sites.
Thank you. Another question. Where do I go next? Covered this. From another one from Wasson, Desmond Lim. Hi, Raj. To design a truly flexible system, we must understand the human interface at each step. Could you describe the current manual process for indexing and locking the engine in its fixed 90-degree position? Specifically, what are the physical steps a technician takes to verify the engine is safely mounted? And what are the most common ergonomic challenges or points of physical strain they experience during the setup and the subsequent module handling?
Yes, so this is probably a question that is a much bigger discussion. But currently, the manual process for indexing and locking, could you describe the current manual process? So it's hard for me to verbally describe it, but effectively, what are the physical steps? So in our manuals, there are specific items that's written that as we mount the engine, there are very specific engine stands that are not the ones I have shown in the picture that allow the engine to be placed vertically in. And then we lock it in specific locations to enable that it's always stable vertically. On top of that, in terms of the interface, we have raised platforms at different heights of the engine that allows the technician to work on that specific module, and then the platform is lower that allows the step technician to work on the next module. Eventually, once we have reached some level of disassembly, we can then rotate it back to horizontal again if need to, and then we subsequently disassemble it. So there is no fix, like it must always be vertical or horizontal when it is already in a module. But when we are taking the engines out, it is always vertical. Now, I know I didn't fully answer the question because, like I said, it's a basically there are specific steps, but I'm happy to kind of have this chat after on what are the physical steps.
Perfect. And maybe I'll do one last one, Raj, before I let you go. Given the safety critical and highly standardized nature of engine MRO, is Shirin asking, what would be the biggest organizational or regulatory hurdles to shifting away from the established handling sequences?
Fantastic question. I will tackle this in the two ways, organizational and regulatory. So the first one I will tackle is regulatory. In the regulatory framework, there are very specific things that we look out for. Things like torque value, things like alignment, things like gap checks. These things do not specifically mention whether it's horizontal or vertical. These things are specific measurable outputs of the disassembly and the reassembly process. As long as we are not deviating from these specific steps, and then eventually the engine will still go for an engine test. If there are certain things that have not been done correctly, again, I'm talking about torquing, bolting, aligning, it will have engine vibrations, which we will detect at the engine test. So for that reason, it will not pass off anyways. So coming to the regulatory part of it, as long as we are doing the actual steps in localized steps correctly and to the established framework, whether we are doing it in a horizontal manner or a vertical manner will not make any difference. So from a regulatory framework, it's perfectly fine because we need to focus on those localized tasks to be done to the standard, to the specs, and then we will cover all the regulatory requirements. From an organizational requirement, we need to follow a very thorough TRL process. So those that are unfamiliar is the technology readiness level. Today, this technology is at a TRL 2, 3. We need to mature it through this TRL process robustly, because if we are able to mature it through the TRL process, then it automatically gives the organizational confidence of passing off this technology into our operations post TRL 6. So we will definitely be following a TRL framework to deliver the solution, which will tackle the organizational resistance, if you may.
Perfect, Raj. Thank you so much for all of your generous sharing. And Raj is not going anywhere. If you there are some questions that we didn't answer, we'll get back to you, get back to them offline. And you can continue asking your questions via the Agorize platform chat interface as well. But just to quickly wrap up and as a quick reminder, so now it's the end of the Q&A segment. The applications are open until the 17th of April. After which the shortlisting and clarification sessions will happen throughout May, leading up to a final selection in late June. Don't forget, we have up to a total of 400,000 Singapore dollars in funding support. And of course, beyond the grant, this is also your gateway to partnering with these industry leaders and accessing mentorship to scale your solutions. So, do join us, do register. If you have any further questions, do reach out via the platform. And thank you so much again for all of you for joining us, and also to Raj for very generously answering all the questions. Thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.